Hey, if you're looking for more action on the road, check out what Cutting Audio's got. Deathlands. Outlanders. The Executioner. Stony Man. We're loaded for bear. Available at road stops everywhere or at www.cuttingaudio.com.
Cutting Audio.
A 100 years ago, a rain of nuclear bombs obliterated civilization in a few minutes of blazing horror. It was the end of the world. Doomsday, sky dark. With the first nuclear explosion, the tissue-thin tapestry of civilization was ripped apart. The rule of law was replaced overnight with the somber, draconian edict of survival of the fittest. Cannibals hunted prey, cold hearts brutally raided farms, and slavers seized anybody they could as chattel. Electricity was seldom seen. Starvation universal. Rape a daily event. Death the only known means of escape. This is America in the late 21st century. Welcome to the Deathlands. Cutting Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, and Gary Arthur. Deathlands 49, Shadow World. Beside the deeply rutted dirt track leading to the Ville of Moonboy, wedged between a pair of boulders, a warning sign shimmered in the blistering midday heat. Crudely chiseled into the rectangle of rusted car door were two words, No Muties. Behind the sign, the good people of Moonboy had left a universal symbol for those travelers who couldn't read. From a gallows, made of an old basketball stanchion and backboard, hung a naked corpse. Sun-dried, and as hard and brown as jerky, it had a huge head and a misshapen body, its finger bones twice as long as its arms. Like many of the other small outposts of human survival in Deathlands, the Ville had sprung up from ruins more than a century old. On January 20, 2001, a Kamchatka-launched ICBM, part of an all-out U.S.-Soviet nuclear exchange, had vaporized nearby Salt Lake City. The three warhead airburst had left behind a radioactive thermoglass rubble field that covered more than 50 square miles. As in the case of other earthly disasters, tornadoes, hurricanes, forest fires, Armageddon had turned out to be a capricious bitch. Up Highway 15 from Ground Zero, snuggled in a gap in the promontory ridge of rock, a Salt Lake City bedroom community had taken a less than annihilating hit. What was now the main drag of Moonboyville had once been a suburban street in the upscale residential development. It was one of the few blocks left standing in the administrative region formerly known as Morgan County, Utah. Facing rows of stucco-sided three-story homes, their windows blown out in the same horrific shock blast, were the underpinnings and center point of the Ville. Scabrous add-ons and rickety lean-tos used the outside walls of the original buildings as their main structural support. Rusting sheets of corrugated metal formed a jumble of makeshift shanty roofs. Their orange stains streaked the pre-dark stucco, iron oxide bleeding from thousands of less than mortal wounds. Intermittent acid rains had long since turned the asphalt pavement between the rows of houses to coarse black sand, and had cratered and dissolved most of the broad, curving driveways and concrete sidewalks. On this cloudless summer day, Moonboy's unemployed residents and visitors sought out the shade of the metal-roofed ramshackle porches that lined either side of the main street. Steel not only defended them from the brutal sun, but from flesh-etching sulfuric acid downpours. About 24 women and men, none particularly clean, most gap-toothed and weathered, sat chewing the fat and sipping air-temperature green beer from recycled plastic antifreeze jugs. A few lay curled up in the shadows on the hard-tamped dirt, snoozing off the remnants of their market-day drunk. By the standards of Deathlands, where wealth and status were measured in armament, Moonboy was a shit-poor place. Along the main street, there were no weapons that would accept high-power centerfire brass cartridges. The only firearms of modern design were a handful of single-shot, top-break, exposed hammer 12-gauges, and every one had a rust-brown barrel, a broken or missing stock, and a crudely tied rope shoulder sling. The rest of the population carried long, razor-honed chilling knives and cheap, scarred, black-powder revolvers, late 20th century, mass-produced copies of Civil War-era sidearms. There were no cops in Moonboy. Official law enforcement was unnecessary, with so many weapons on display. Justice, or what passed for it, was within easy reach of every hand. And God help the rad-blasted mutie who stumbled within range of blade or pistol ball. Piercing screams erupted from the top floor of the gaudy house in the middle of the block. It was impossible to tell whether the screamer was male or female, or if the cries were of pain or pleasure. The porch squatters ignored the shrill racket. Moonboy's pure norm sluts were well compensated for their time and trouble. After a few minutes, the shrieking stopped and the echoes faded. None of the drowsy street-side spectators expected anything interesting to happen until nightfall. The withering heat made a knife fight to the death highly unlikely. The potential combatants were all either too flagged or too hungover to get into a serious beef with anyone. Then the air in the middle of the street began to shimmer. It wasn't just heat waves coming off the ruined asphalt. At head height, dust motes glittered and whirled, quickly turning into a man-sized tornado. The Moonboy folk blinked in amazement, then hurriedly kicked awake their dozing friends. This was no ordinary dust devil. It sparkled as if it held millions of tiny fragments of mirror in its spinning funnel. With each passing second, the glittering bits grew more and more distinct. And brighter. So bright, in fact, that the residents had to either squint or shield their eyes from the hard glare. A powerful wind accompanied this apparition. It set road dust flying and scraggly beards flapping. There was a deep bass rumble below the wind's howl, the building growl of some impossibly huge engine. An ear-splitting thundercrack rattled the corrugated steel roofs over the spectators' heads. The shockwave vibrated up through the soles of their feet, through their legs, to their very bowels. In a flash, the tornado flew apart. And before their eyes, at the epicenter of the ville, the seams of reality split and peeled back. A tall humanoid figure in black stepped out of nothing and nowhere, out of the ragged slash in space, birthed full-grown into the middle of the road, accompanied by a nauseating, super-concentrated petrochemical stench. The figure wore a suit of head-to-foot black armor, and the armor gleamed as if it had been dipped in machine oil. Like the carapace of some gigantic, rad-mutated insect, the suit was segmented over arms and legs, overlapping, contoured plates protecting the torso. The boots, shin guards, and helmet were of the same material. An impenetrable, smoke-colored, wraparound visor concealed the face. All eyes locked onto the blue-black blaster the creature gripped in its gauntleted hands. The weapon was of stubby bullpup design. A styrene stock held three heavy barrels joined in a triangular configuration, and a single claw-toothed flash hider crowned all three muzzles. A massively thick, curving magazine extended below the stock, just in front of the rifle's butt plate. No one on the street had ever seen or even heard tell of anything quite like it. Though they didn't know what mayhem the wicked-looking piece was capable of, in their hearts, every man and woman lusted after it. Whether traded for Jack or Jolt, or kept as a personal sidearm, such a weapon could make life in the hellscape known as Deathlands a whole lot easier to bear. Before any of the folk could move to appropriate the blaster, there was another boom of thunder and a flash. A second identical figure stepped from nowhere into the middle of the road.